This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Now, people don't just want to hear about a crime. They want to understand it. They want to get inside the mind of the person who committed that crime, and they want to know why. At least that's, I know what I like to do here at Hidden Killers and True Crime Today, trying to figure out what drove the person to do what they did. What is the recipe that makes up that person? You hear me use that term quite a bit. We're going to do just that on this episode. We're going to dig a little bit deeper into the case of Brian Koberger. We're going to dig into the psychology of Brian Koberger and why all of that matters right now, because medical records, health records, all of that are now beginning to come into play as the prosecution just got their hands on it. So what does this all mean? How do we break all this down? Well, let's go back to the start of this and stay with me, okay? And if you have any comments about this, any insight yourself, love to hear it in the comments section. If you're watching this on YouTube, that exists there. If you're listening to this as a podcast, you can always, of course, go to our social media or jump over to our YouTube channel and comment there. I'd love to see it. I'd love to hear if you agree, you disagree, why. It's always good. So what kind of person commits a crime like this, like the one that Brian Koberger is accused of committing? Were they born with something different in their brain? Did something happen along the way? Was it planned, or did he just snap one night and said, I'm going to go kill three college girls and a boy? How did this happen? Why did this happen? When it comes to Brian Koberger, the accused in the University of Idaho murders, we might be closer to getting some answers in that department, because the prosecution now has access to his medical and psychiatric records. This may not sound like much at first. After all, Idaho does not even allow the insanity defense, a la Lori Vallow Daybell. But if Koberger is convicted, these records could become the difference between life in prison or the death penalty. So what's actually in these records? What do we already know about Koberger's mental health history? And how could it shape the outcome of the case? Let's break it all down. Brian Koberger's early mental health struggles. Let's start there, because we heard about some of this stuff early on. Let's take a trip back, because you may have forgotten some of this. It's been 2 years now almost since some of this stuff started coming to light. To understand all of this, we're going to go back to where it all started here, not just to the crime, not just to his time in college, but to his childhood. Because if there's one thing we've learned from other criminal cases, it's that patterns of mental health struggles usually don't start the moment of the crime. They build up over time. Koberger was born in 1994 and grew up in Albrightsville, Pennsylvania. He wasn't the kind of kid people described as dangerous or violent, but he also wasn't exactly outgoing either. It doesn't make a criminal, just that's how he is, or he was. Classmates and people from his childhood remember him as a shy, withdrawn, and socially awkward kid. Hey, I was one of those too. But then something changed. When he reached high school, Koberger underwent a dramatic transformation. He lost a significant amount of weight, which for most people might be a confidence boost. But for Koberger, that change came with a personality shift that some described as unsettling. Some of his classmates say he became more arrogant, more aggressive, and more detached. It wasn't just about losing weight. It was like he wanted people to see him differently. But he wasn't quite sure how to make that happen. And then there was the drug use. Koberger reportedly struggled with heroin addiction as a teenager. He later managed to get clean, but the fact that he even went down the road raises big questions about what was really going on inside his head. Because let's be honest, heroin isn't a party drug. People don't casually experiment with heroin. Most of the time, it's used as an escape, as a way of self-medicating, something much deeper. And for some, that something deeper is undiagnosed or untreated mental illness. So, was Koberger already struggling with something serious? And did anyone ever step in to help? Let's look at the college years and the accusations of his fascination with the criminal mind. When Koberger went to college, he made an interesting choice. He studied criminal justice. Let's be clear, there's nothing unusual about being interested in criminology. It's why we're all here. Millions of people are fascinated by true crime. You're probably one of them. I'm one of them. But Koberger wasn't just watching documentaries. He was actively studying the behavior of criminals. And that's good. We need people to do that. We need investigators that can understand these sort of things. Just not necessarily criminals doing that. At DeSales University, he earned a master's degree in criminal justice. And during that time, he conducted a research project where he asked criminals about their decision-making process. Here's some of the questions that he asked. How do you select your victims? How did you prepare for the crime? What were you thinking afterwards? There was a lot more too. It wasn't casual curiosity. It was methodical. It was as if there was something in him that he was trying to see the inside of a mind of a killer. It makes you wonder if he's looking in the mirror a little bit going, do I have these signs? I mean, that's just my own speculation on some of those questions. Then he took it a step further. In 2022, he enrolled in a PhD program in criminology at Washington State University. But by the time he got there, people started noticing things. Students who interacted with him described him as cold, distant, and arrogant. Maybe kind of in line with his personality and what people had recognized earlier. Again, doesn't make you a murderer. Some people just come across that way. Some of his students, because yes, he was also a teaching assistant, said he was unfair, unpredictable, and sometimes aggressive. And then right before the murders, he stopped working as a teaching assistant altogether. He got fired because of not interacting well with the students, not playing well, if you want to be kind of brash about it. That's when people really started to wonder, was something breaking inside his mind? The newly unsealed medical records are revealing some interesting things, or at least they're probably going to reveal some things. These medical records and psychiatric records that have now been handed over to the prosecution. Here's what we know. These records include mental health evaluations and prescription history. They were previously sealed, but have now been turned over under a court order. The exact contents have not yet been made public, but the fact that they exist at all is significant. Let's talk about why this actually matters. The fact that the prosecution now has these. Because the defense said, we don't want to give those up early on. Even though Idaho doesn't allow an insanity defense, these records could still come into play just a little bit later, specifically during sentencing, okay? These might not even come up in the actual trial. Because if Koberger is convicted, his lawyers might argue that his mental health struggles meant he shouldn't be executed. And that argument has worked before. Similar cases where mental illness changed the outcome are out there. Let's talk about Nicholas Cruz, the Parkland school shooter. Cruz pled guilty to killing 17 people, and the only question left was, would he get life in prison or the death penalty? His lawyers focused entirely on his mental health history, his neurological issues, his psychiatric diagnosis, and his traumatic childhood. And guess what? It worked. The jury spared him from execution. And there's James Holmes, the Aurora Theater shooter. His lawyers argued that he was severely schizophrenic, that his crime was driven by delusions. The prosecution fought back, saying he knew exactly what he was doing. The verdict? He was guilty, but no death penalty. Now let's get back over to Koberger. If these newly unsealed records show a serious mental illness diagnosis, his legal team could try to do the same thing. They might not be able to argue that he's innocent, but they could fight to keep him alive. And that may be where they're at right now. One can't believe that the defense of Koberger is sitting there going, gosh, we got a great defense. He loves looking at the stars at night. What jury is not going to believe that? At a certain point in certain cases, if you're the defense attorney, you have to say to your client, hey, look, I don't know that we're going to be able to keep you out of prison. Right now, it may just be, let's not get you executed by your firing squad. Are we there yet? I don't know. Ultimately, Ann Taylor has to do what Koberger wants. She's representing him. He is the one that ultimately does call the plays. How will the prosecution respond to all of this? The prosecution isn't just going to let this all slide. Their argument is going to be mental illness or not, this was a planned, calculated crime. And they have the evidence to back it up. His phone records allegedly show him stalking the victims for weeks before the crime. He turned his phone off the night of the murders. An intentional move, many are arguing, to avoid tracking right at the time of the killings. So some driving into the area, phone goes off, and it's back on and is way back to Pullman, Washington. There is no evidence of a sudden break or psychotic episode here. If they can convince the jury that Koberger was fully aware of his actions, then his mental health won't save him from the death penalty. So what's next? Right now, those medical records are still sealed, but at some point they are going to be made public. And when that happens, we're going to learn a lot more about Koberger's mental state, whether he had a formal diagnosis, whether he was medicated, whether there was warning signs that people ignored. Remember the visual snow that he talked about, allegedly, in some writings when he was a teenager? That's all out there. Having a real hard time relating to other people, having a real hard time. Because if that is him that was writing about that, he's flat out saying he did not feel, he did not connect with people, that he recognized a difference in himself at a certain point in his life where it was almost like a switch was flipped off. And I'm just paraphrasing here, but that's essentially what it was saying. It was a young man that was reaching out for help, reaching out to go, am I normal? Is this common? What is happening to me? You know, when we're all in that age, 15, 16, 17, right around there, and everything starts to seem a little bit different. Trying to figure out what is going on. So you got to give someone credit for that, for trying to reach out. But was that enough? Did that answer any questions for him? Did that get him on a path to get any sort of help? And did it just not work? Or was it just left to what that is? You know, you go online, you go into a chat room, you go into a Reddit, you do whatever. And that's where it is. You get your information out there and it's done. When it all comes out, it could shift the entire conversation about this case, those medical records. Because at the end of the day, this trial isn't just about what he did, it's about why he did it and whether that answer changes what happens next. We don't know exactly what will happen next. Trial is set for later this summer. There'll be many more motions between now and then, and very likely this trial could get pushed back even further. But what those medical records reveal may be the difference between life and death for Brian Koberger. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you are getting podcasts so you don't miss any of our updates on this case and all of the cases we follow for you right here at True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for joining us.
The world of true crime never stops, and neither do we. Press subscribe now to get daily updates, in-depth analysis, and expert opinions from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Extra Value Meals are back. For just $5, get a savory and sweet sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles, plus hash browns and a coffee. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.